Good Friday. Today is July the 11th, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, galls will impact all sorts of ornamental plants. They also impact some plants that we don't like to see as much, such as poison ivy. We're going to take a look at the impacts on poison ivy and fragrant sumac caused by the insects that create galls after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
Taking a look at your agricultural headlines, poison ivy making the news actually, and some different ones fighting galls. We want to talk about the different mites that cause those galls on different types of plants. It's kind of peculiar that the eriophid mite bladder galls on leaflets of eastern poison ivy actually can resemble sometimes the little blisters people get on their skins after they've come into contact with the oil resin that is a part of these plants. It's interesting that the gall-infested poison ivy plants suffer some of the same exasperating irritations. These galls are the handiwork of the poison ivy leaf gall mite, and the irregular wart-like galls rise from the upper surface of the leaflets. They are at first a light green color, but then they turn deep red as those galls will mature. Heavily galled leaves may actually have a twisted, deformed look. The leaf gall mite also produces bladder galls on western poison ivy. Now, that isn't typically found in Ohio. They can also impact poison sumac, which rarely is found in the state, but it is here at times. Now, that same mite also produces bladder galls on fragrant sumac. This is the only host of the mite that belongs in that particular genus. Based on some observations, damage, though, to fragrant sumac does not seem to affect the overall plant health, and unfortunately, it also doesn't seem to negatively impact poison ivy's aggressive nature either. These mites are unique among some of the different mites, as that their anatomy and a large range of symptoms are produced on the plants. First, the eriophids are very small. Spider mites can actually be seen with the naked eye, and you can see details with a 10x hand lens. These mites, on the other hand, are hard to see with the naked eye. They just look like specks of dust. They can be called a coneflower rosette mite, and it can take a 30 macro lens and even that at magnification for the mites to look bigger than specks of dust, only slightly bigger though. A 40x magnification is often required to see any details of this mite. Secondly, spider mites have round to oblong shaped bodies with four pairs of legs that extend laterally from the sides of their bodies. These mites are cigar shaped and they only have two pairs of legs that extend from the front of the body. No other mite only has two pairs of legs at any stage in its development. Eriophids can generate a wide range of plant symptoms depending on the mite species. However, one thing they typically have in common is a narrow host range, often involving a single plant genus or plant species. So, for example, leaves of the black tupelo are home to two of the eriophid gall makers. The tupelo bead galls are produced by the eriophids, and the tupelo leaf edge roll galls are also produced by another eriophid. These are found on no other plants or other plant species. The willow bladder gall eriophid mite only affects plants belonging to that genus, and its handiwork may be observed on willows found in Ohio, including the black willow, the pussy willow, and also the weeping willow. Another eriophid mite, which is sometimes called the maple bladder gall mite, produces bladder galls on the upper leaf surface of both silver maples and red maples. Like the bladder galls on poison ivy, the maple bladder gall changes colors as they age from light green to deep red, something you've probably seen on your maple trees if you've had them for a number of years. The other ones that are out there, the eriophids, are making handiwork of a single Acer species known as the box elder bladder galls. They undergo a distinctive change in appearance as they age and transform from small green bladder galls to large wart-like protrusions with velvet-like patches on the corresponding lower leaf surfaces, sometimes called the box elder velvet galls. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now. Look at a popular summertime food that's right around harvest, and that would be cherries. USDA's Rod Bain has this update.
Cherries. This year's crop of this summertime 4th of July treat is now being harvested.
And so they're readily available in grocery stores here very soon. Anyway, I'm sure we're starting to see some now.
Lance Honig of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service says harvest continues until about mid-July. You may know there are two types of cherries, sweet and tart. How are they different besides the obvious clues in their names? Honig explains with sweet cherries.
This time of year, we think about cherries, especially around the 4th of July. They tend to be a staple at some of those 4th of July picnics and gatherings. And we're really talking about the sweet cherries. These are the cherries that are typically eaten fresh. They really don't store well. And so this is the time of year when they mature and get harvested. And so they're readily available.
While with tart cherries,
this is what you see appearing in your pies and your pastries and other delicious desserts where cherries are featured. And because of the nature of that, we freeze them, we store them. And so we can find those pretty much year-round.
And when it comes to keeping track of sweet and tart cherries in USDA production reports,
if you look at when we publish estimates, we'll publish both sweet and tart cherry numbers, and you'll never see in an ASS report a total cherry number. And that is simply because the crops are so unique that it really doesn't make any sense to put them together.
So perhaps the question on your mind, will there be plenty of cherries available this year? Honig starts with a look at this year's sweet cherry harvest forecast, which
represents the largest crop since 2017,
with a projected year-over-year production increase of 4%. Driving the production gains, the nation's largest cherry-growing state, Washington.
They're expecting about a 29% increase this season. Weather's been really good for the crop there, and so great news from both Washington and a national perspective.
A slight production rise is also reported in Oregon. The offset in sweet cherry production this season is California.
There's some extreme weather during the bloom, and as a result, they're actually looking at a crop that's about 38% smaller than last year.
Michigan is far and away the largest tart cherry growing state in the U.S. Yet Honig says,
and it's a really tough season for them. In fact, they're looking at about a 41% drop in tart cherry production this year due to poor weather.
That poor weather, however, was not a major freeze event usually associated with tart cherry production declines.
That's not the case this year. It's just been not good weather. It's a pretty big drop. In fact, nationally, that means we're only looking at 139 million pounds this year. That's more than a third below last season's crop. It'll be the smallest crop since 2020 and the second smallest crop since that disastrous year of 2012 when Michigan lost almost all their cherries.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great weekend.